CFL training camps are just days away, 5 days away until training camps open up, and yet there is no collective bargaining agreement. There is still no framework for the league and the players going into the season. Welcome back to the Steinberg Show. Pat Steinberg along with you as we continue from our Basement Systems downtown studio. Time to welcome in our CFL insider, Justin Dunk from 3downnation.com. Get the latest on what's happening around the league and the latest on the CBA negotiations.
Loose use of the word insider, will you?
Yeah, I mean, what do they call him? The info kid? Is that what it is, Dunk?
That's what some of these older guys around the league have referred to me as. I'm not the same age as a kid, but I'll take it, man.
Well, I like it. The info kid it is. That's your pinned tweet. So I think you have to start taking on that moniker now. What's happening, my man? How are you?
Good, man. Just came off calling U Sports East-West Bowl in Ottawa, where Adam Snagger absolutely lit it up.
Yeah, he was good. I looked at those numbers, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on the East-West Bowl. And we'll do that a little bit later on, but let's get right into it. Where are we? What's happening? And what's the latest on the collective bargaining agreement? It sure does sound like things have taken a positive turn, but what are we talking about right now?
It does a little bit, based on what the CFLPA put out today and telling players to be ready to report to training camp. But I feel like that's just fairly procedural. There's been some longer negotiations this week, deep in the wee hours in the morning last night, and then they got started early today. But I don't get the sense that we're through the thick of it yet. They're talking about the monetary issues, but those are oftentimes, and most of the time in reality, the most contentious ones. So until we start sorting through those or get an idea that they've been dealt with, then the timeline that they're on, less than 4 days now until that deadline is going to hit, I have a hard time seeing this being done. Now, in the past, it has happened, and if they do stick around and have some of these longer negotiations continue, it could be possible. But right now, even though they're talking a good game, I'm not so sure that's going down in the boardroom.
Okay. What are the big-time contentious issues right now? What is being what are the areas that the heads are butting most?
Well, it comes down to the monetary issues, right? And the main one is the players want their guys or union members to be made whole. So when the contract ends, everyone's talking about Jonathan Hefny, they want their players to at least be seen through all of the medical services that they potentially would need if they suffer a career-ending injury, a season-ending injury, what have you. So until we get to that point, I don't even think we can start to discuss, well, how much of a cut of the salary cap are the players going to get or what the minimum salaries potentially end up at, because that issue is number one and central and has been vocalized by President Jeff Keeping and CFLPA Executive Director Brian Ramsey.
Now, tell us about, because I know there was news, and I believe it was you who broke it at 3Down Nation, about the strike vote. 97% of the PA voted to strike if that's the way the leadership went. What does that mean, and do you expect any type of actual labor stoppage?
Well, it just means that the CFLPA put themselves in a position from a provincial labor standpoint, except for in Alberta and Ontario, to be able to go on strike. In those two provinces that I named, they would actually have to go to training camp for 4 days, and then they could strike. So the CFLPA could strike in two separate ways if they felt that that was needed. Do I feel like that's actually going to happen? Well, it's only happened once before, all the way back in 1974, and it was a 12-day period where players weren't in camps. And I alluded to it earlier, the deadline to me is just getting really tight. And until I hear behind the scenes about some legitimate progress, I really do think it's a possibility.
Okay. So what's a legitimate timeline here? What are some of we know training camps start on the 19th. Do you expect players to show up and negotiations to continue? Like, what are we looking at in the immediacy here?
It could be a funny situation because you could have the players in Alberta and Ontario getting ready and going to camp and showing up, and the rookies have made their way out. There was a picture online of Vincent Desjardins, the Calgary Stampeders second-round draft pick, making their way out there. But the rookies aren't actually technically in the union or voting members yet. So that's a little different. When we're getting to the point where we're talking about main training camp opening and the veterans, that's where, as I said, it can get funny, where you're going to have the guys in Alberta and Ontario potentially showing up, and being ready to. And if there's not a deal done, the telling sign will be in all of those other provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, yep. BC. Do they actually show up? Because that will tell us, I really believe, what way the players are feeling about the negotiations.
He's Justin Dunk from 3downnation.com talking some CFL with us on the Steinberg Show.
JD, just hypothetically, if the season, say there is a strike of some sort or something does happen and there's a hiccup in the CBA negotiations and it doesn't, you know, begin with the May 26th opening preseason game, the league going to cancel things week by week? Do you see them doing by chunks or, you know, that's a little further down the road. I understand that. But what's your read on the situation as we sit here today?
Well, the way the league has dealt with many other things is a case-by-case basis. There's some people that joke around that Randy Ambrosi just sort of goes off the cuff with some of the decisions that he's made. So if you're going to talk about that first preseason game on May 26th, that is going to have to be a decision that's made, obviously closer to the date, but after the CBA deadline potentially passes, and if a strike does happen, then a decision will be made as to what happens with that game and anything else going forward.
Probably enough CBA talk. Hey, we're probably good there. We can move along to some more fun things.
These aren't fun talk.
This is a team that you've been around for a long time, and it's actually, I believe, the city you call home. But how much of a surprise was the June Jones news to you, and how long, from your understanding, has this been a decision that Mr. Jones has been mulling over?
It really wasn't a surprise to me. There had been murmurs about it going all the way back to when June Jones had stepped down from the head coaching position and became the offensive coordinator. Not that he didn't love it, but you're talking about a guy that his entire football coaching career was in America until he came south to coach the Ticats a few years ago. So it makes sense from a lot of perspectives. I guarantee you the money he'll be making as a head coach of that XFL franchise will be more than double, potentially even triple, what he would have made in Hamilton as the offensive coordinator especially. So it didn't surprise me just because of what I heard was going on behind the scenes. The timing, though, was a little bit tight to training camp, right? Although they did have Tommy Condell in-house, and it does seem like June Jones kept an open line of communication with Orlando Steinauer and the Ticats about what he was looking at. But still, that timing might be a little weird to people.
I know they wanted to protect Steinauer, but would June Jones be leaving if he was still the head coach?
That's a great question. There were some people that felt like it was, a bit of a something I could say on radio, maybe a bit of a shot back at the Ticats, because there were people that felt like, you know, he was forced to step down because they wanted to secure Orlando Steinauer as the head coach because there was interest out there from Toronto and BC. That's just really, really hard to say. I'm sure June Jones, and he did, said all the right things about it, as well as Orlando Steinauer. But if he was still a head coach, it would depend on what his salary was going to be and the future prospects of remaining in that position.
It's okay. You could have just said he flipped a double bird. That would have worked. I'm sure that's what you're going for. Am I reading this correctly? John Ryan's making six figures to kick footballs?
You are.
Holy. I guess I should go train to be a punter, because that's some pretty good coin. Tell us the story
really
there.
Shouldn't. The Canadian one at that, right? It makes a lot of sense when even you just go past the punting aspect, because of all the hype that John Ryan's already created. He's beloved in Regina. So from a marketing standpoint, especially for the Riders, $100,000 really isn't very much. And all of the positive press they're going to get out of it makes a lot of sense. But the team obviously has to operate under the cap. And there's some people that are saying, well, you know, how much do you gain by having John Ryan? Not that he's not a great punter, but compared to what Josh Bartel was doing the last few years was really strong. And let's say the salary difference is probably like $20,000 or $30,000. So how could that have been invested into another player? That said, I totally believe it's worth it.
Two more from me. The first one is a guy who used to sling footballs. Give us your thoughts as Ricky Ray closes the book on his legendary CFL career.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but it just seemed like after he got hurt in that game against Calgary last year that was going to be the last snap he ever took in the CFL. As for his career overall, I mean, I remember as a youngster watching Ricky Ray when he's playing for the Edmonton Eskimos throwing corner routes for touchdowns all over the place and sort of trying to emulate what he did. He burst onto the scene and then had a shot in the NFL and came back up here and obviously had a great career won 4 Grey Cups, one of the game's best ever at the position.
And how does that leave the Argonauts? Because last time I talked to you was right after the draft. They took O'Connor, who is a Canadian kid, and the one thing you remarked was how many Canadians they have on their depth chart. What does the quarterback depth chart look like in Toronto, and how do you read it going into the season?
Well, we've got James Franklin, who's been pretty much pegged as their number one guy going into training camp. He's going to be paid like that if he plays all 18 games, or most of them. He'll make around $400,000. So that's starter money in the CFL. They have McLeod Bethel-Thompson, who's on the last year of his rookie deal. So cheap, he'll probably make around, you know, $60,000, $70,000, I would imagine. And then, as you mentioned, you have the Canadians. Noah Pickton's going to be in training camp from the Regina Rams. He drafted Michael O'Connor from the UBC Thunderbirds. And then Brandon Bridge is going to be there as well. I really get the sense that when they brought Brandon Bridge in, they felt like James Franklin and Brandon Bridge could be a very complementary 1-2 because of their skill sets and ability to move around in the pocket. And then what Jim Popp's doing with those Canadian quarterbacks is getting ahead of the thinking that there's going to be a change surrounding Canadian quarterbacks and how they count towards the ratio on the next CBA. So if he sort of stockpiles a couple, you know, maybe he's got some trade pieces potentially down the line.
Justin Dunk from 3downnation.com as we talk a little CFL in the offseason, although offseason not here for much longer. Training camp start in 5 days if there's a CBA. Want to ask you, because we'll ask you about Ricky Ray there, and you just talked about what his retirement does and, you know, what the future looks like at quarterback for the Argos. You take a look at what Ricky Ray accomplished throughout his career. The most accurate passer in CFL history. Career passing completion of around 68.2% is what he finishes at. The 4 Grey Cups as a starter, which is a CFL record, so on and so forth. Where's Ricky Ray ranked for you among the greatest of all time?
Oh, my goodness. See, when I get into these conversations, I feel like it's difficult because we didn't actually see a lot of these guys play. And I just mean that we're a bit of a younger crowd,
for
right?
Sure.
You go to some of the more veteran, let's say, people in the media who have seen the likes of those players play over the years, then it's easier to rank it. But, I mean, as you said, just based off the amount of Grey Cups, passing yards, and how well he was liked by his teammates and the leadership he provided, I feel like that should really be another key factor. That Ricky Ray's definitely got to be in the top 10 and probably in most people's top 5 all time at the position.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it is, people who saw Flutie in his prime or, you know, going on and on down the ranks. It's tough to have a definitive one, but take a look at that accuracy. I don't know. Trevor Harris is at 70% in terms of his career accuracy, but there's still plenty of chapters to be written in his career. It's going to be tough to see a quarterback retire with all the accolades and the accuracy of Ricky Ray. That's a pretty incredible mark that he retires with.
It really is. He's once in a generation and, you know, maybe sort of once in a lifetime to come along in the CFL as a quarterback. And if we ever see another guy like Ricky Ray, you know, potentially there's a guy like that in Calgary, Bo Levi Mitchell, who has a high completion percentage, already has 2 Grey Cups, is really young. I'm just saying that he's on that track.
He's junk.
And I was about to pump your tires, too. I was going to say Dunk at Guelph was my number one, but that's fine.
Let's not go there.
And I don't think that we need to pump Bo Levi's tires.
Yeah, you know what? He sucks.
He's awful. But listen to his show when it potentially
returns. No, don't
returns.
Listen.
Just kidding. We love you, Bo. Justin Dunk's with us. Okay, couple of CFL dork questions. First of all, what's happening with Bryant Mitchell? The former Eskimos receiver gets released in the NFL. What are you hearing about his future? Is he coming back to Canada, or is he still sniffing around south of the border?
You hit it on the head there with the latter point, still waiting patiently to see if another NFL opportunity arises. He was a guy that had multiple workouts in December with NFL teams, so he can afford to be patient. It's not like he needs to be in a training camp to be able to prove himself. CFL teams are well aware of what he can do on the field, so he's just being patient.
And what about Alex Green? He was the biggest name when Hamilton made a surprising round of cuts last week. He was an extremely productive running back when healthy last year, but he'll be 31 next season. At running back, what are you expecting for Alex Green? Is he going to get work this season? Is he going to get work before the start of the regular season?
If there's some injuries, potentially, but you mentioned at the age, 31 years old, and when healthy, he's been productive. That's been the trouble, is him staying on the field. And when he came off the roster, it seemed like there was a lot of shuffling there with the Ticats. So if there's some a rash of injuries at the position, I could see him getting a job, but it probably won't be until we get into the actual regular season.
Okay, final thought. You called the East-West Bowl at Carleton. Give us your takeaways of some of the best players in U-Sports.
Adam Sinagra was an absolute stud, and it shouldn't be just based on that performance, but yet again shows that no matter the setting, and even though he didn't have any familiar receivers there from his Calgary Dinos, which he set a U-Sports record with over 3,200 yards last year, that he can be productive. And there were some scouts that I was talking to, and I was asking them, you know, about his pro potential and how they felt, and they start talking about his size. And I'm going, well, there are so many people that have already doubted him to even get to where he is now. Why do we have to talk about his size when we've had other guys in the league? And let's say, like, Bolivar Mitchell, he's not a big, you know, 6'4", 6'5" guy, and he's getting it done all right. I'm not saying Sinagra is Mitchell, but he's had the opportunity to learn from him, been ultra productive at the position, so deserves an opportunity. And the class overall seems much different from 2019. I don't think the depth is quite there, but there's some standout players. And actually, one guy that didn't suit up on the field, a name you need to know, out of Laval University, an offensive tackle, Cattell Esse. He was measured at the Laval University Pro Day when they showed up to do Matthew Betts. They said, who's that big jack dude over there that looks pretty slim and trim for his size? So that's a guy that could potentially next year be an NFL pick.
2 years left at the UFC potentially for Sinagra, right?
That's right. If he needs
him. If he needs him. What does he project to as a pro, do you think? Like, are we talking about a high CFL pick here?
Well, it depends if the rule surrounding Canadian quarterback
right.
changes, and that could vault him up. And I think that's why Michael O'Connor was able to go in the third round. And Michael O'Connor, flat out on talent, probably should have even gone higher than that. Sinagra, what scouts are going to want to see is the continued production and dominance. And they're going to want to see him put a little bit of thickness on his frame. He's obviously not going to hit a growth spurt probably this late, but I would sort of compare him to Andrew Buckley from that standpoint. Is there were some people that thought, you know, he's maybe a little too slight, but he was able to develop, put on some thickness, be that short yardage guy and versatile to earn a roster spot and be able to develop to the point where he was a backup. And even some people around the league felt like he had a shot to be a number one someday. So I feel like Sinagra could potentially be on a similar trajectory.
Good stuff, Dunk. Get out of here, man. Appreciate it as always. Hopefully we're talking about a CBA resolution very soon.
Yeah, and just football, that'd be all right.
It'd be awesome, yeah. That's the way to do it.
See you, Dunk.
Bye, Dunk.
See you guys.